It's time to meet up and catch up at the Weekend Water Cooler. Now, here's your host, Gene Bolduc.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to the Weekend Water Cooler. I'm Gene Bolduc, your host, welcoming today our good friend, Orange County Commissioner Mark Margopoulos. Mark, happy to have you.
Good to be here.
Well, you know, where to begin, as is always the case, there's not much going on in Orange County ever at all. You've been about halfway through, I guess, about halfway through your first year as commissioner, and you did not just discover your interest in Orange County politics last year. So before we dive into the budget and drown in the numbers, I'm very interested to know how you can compare and contrast the experience of what's the technical term, watching the sausage being made as opposed to making the sausage, I guess. How is it? How's it going? That's the broad question, right? How's it going?
Well, it's going fine. I'm enjoying it. I'm continuing to learn how to be more effective. But I must say, it's unlike anything I would have expected. And, you know, serving on county boards and committees and talking to interested citizens in the community all these years is entirely different from sitting up there with all these people looking at you and so little time to say what you want to say.
Right.
It's a whole different way of communicating, because I always figured I'm pretty good around the kitchen table.
Right.
Can have a little debate back and forth. We figure things out.
Right.
Have some good ideas, hone the ideas. But when you're there, you don't have all night, for one thing.
Yeah.
And
although I'm sure a lot of nights it feels like you're taking all night.
Yeah, we do take our share sometimes.
Wow.
But, you know, it's sort of an art to learn how to say what you want to say as succinctly as possible and still cover everything and give everybody else a chance to weigh in, knowing that you're not going to be able to jump in three or four more times.
Right.
So that's been an interesting learning curve, just to learn how to participate in that sort of
it's much more formalized.
Very
than
formal
how,
way.
How smaller boards work. And,
yeah.
Because I've done, you know, I've been on a lot of those too. And, there's a lot more give and take, and you have a lot more flexibility as a smaller board. And you don't have a big audience of people there and, you know,
exactly.
all that to consider. So,
exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I guess it's just a more formalized thing of, you know, we're going to hear from everybody, then we're going to go down the board, and then we're going to, you know, they say that there'll be a discussion, but it's not very free form at all.
No.
At the commissioner's level.
I think it could be a little more free form, and so that's something that I can maybe help evolve a little bit, but not as the new guy right away.
you can have that as your secret agenda, but you want to trim it down. I mean, what would be necessary to do that? I guess would be reducing the size of the agendas, because I mean there can be some mammoth agendas, and but you must have to do a mountain of reading before the meeting and have your 10 questions written out and then decide which three are going to be the ones that come up.
Yeah, so here's another thing that really struck me. When you're on the outside and you're working these committees, and especially when you campaign and you run, you have all these brilliant ideas that you want to bring to the people.
Right.
And you're thinking, when I get on there, I'm gonna
so
much
tear
change.
This place up.
You know, you're not gonna recognize this government.
That's right.
But
it's gonna be a lean, mean machine.
But what happens is there is so much energy expended on maintenance of government, and it's all very necessary and it's all very important.
Mm-hmm.
But there's precious little time for innovation.
Yeah.
And then when you're in a situation where you're reacting to the crazy state legislature that is lobbing grenades at us periodically, then you're defending the maintenance of your government rather than expanding it in creative ways. So, you know, I've been on 6 months and I'm starting to see what the pace is and when you can suggest innovative things and how you might move them forward.
You know, it's interesting what you're saying reminds me of this problem that Penny Rich has been having. Sorry, Penny, for bringing this out again, a sore subject. But about every few months, it seems to me, she'll put something on Facebook saying another flat tire. And when I hear what you're saying, it makes me think, can you imagine if you got a flat tire, you know, every other month when you went out to go for a ride?
Yeah, right. That's what
you know,
like,
you get used to having your certain things be a reliable format or just a foundation for how you're operating a local government, is that the state government is sort of generally on your side. And I don't know anybody in local government who feels that way right now. It really is like what happens if they, you know, open the wrong door in Raleigh and let these people at their voting buttons. We just don't know what's going to happen.
It's a lot more relaxing when they're not in session.
Yeah. Right.
when they're in session, it's like every day, like, look at your email and go, what am I going to see today?
You have somebody, you know? Do you have somebody in the, this is a serious question. Do you have somebody in the Orange County government who does nothing else but watch the GA?
Well, our attorney does other things, but he watches the laws more than anyone else.
Right.
And I just started subscribing a couple of weeks ago to the listserv coming out of Raleigh, coming out of the legislature, that just tells you what bills are considering.
What bills are considering.
Yeah, it's just very brief.
They don't
brief.
Even
it's
have
like,
to be introduced yet, right? It's just a...
Well, I guess it's been introduced or sponsored in some way, but just bills that are being considered, I guess.
Right.
And it's
That's
just a description
idea.
Of what the bill is, and you just kind of get a feel for how intrusive their approach is.
Right.
And the meddling that they're doing
and then you go
all across
and
the state.
Check out the person who's sponsoring it, and you can probably, you know, glean from that kind of where that's coming from and what's going on there. It's, you know, I remember many years ago when I was running for the school board, a very long time ago, and there was a briefing that the school district gave to us, Orange County District, that gave to all the candidates, and they said, now, you know, you should get out there with your opinions and your views, and everybody should hear from you, and that's great. But if you are elected to the school board, what you should know is that when the school board meeting is the best show in town, that's not good.
Right. Yeah.
Now, sometimes I think that school districts, not just our own, but many school districts, kind of conspicuously avoid difficult subjects because they're so afraid of publicity. And they probably lurch too far in the other direction to try to avoid stirring anything up anywhere, anytime, for any reason. And they can sometimes make things worse by not confronting difficult subjects. But you know, the last couple of years, I don't think we have a lot of choice. I think that there are difficult political topics that just have to, you know, get on the table for everybody.
Yep, it's turbulent times everywhere. I will say one thing on that the staff, Orange County staff, has been really good at fielding input and arranging sort of organized ways that the citizens can have their input, not blocking it, not avoiding that input in any way.
Right.
And it really comes down to how skillful is the staff and everybody involved at facilitating the input and dealing with it, right?
Right.
Because
right.
you can put your hands over your ears at a certain point and say you're tired of it, but that's not the right response. You know, you've just got to continue to work on how do people get to say what they want to say? Can they communicate?
Yeah, and how do you know when you've heard every perspective too? And I think you're right. I think that the light rail debate was probably a pretty good example of that. I'm sure everybody was pretty well exhausted by the end of it all, of trying to evaluate every angle of the topic. But I do think that the government made a pretty good demonstration that, you know, that you all wanted to hear everybody's thoughts on that.
Absolutely. No one can say that they didn't get the opportunity to communicate to us on that.
Right.
And we gave ample opportunity. So that was a really interesting thing, because the night I was sworn in was the longest meeting in 5 years. It was a 5-hour meeting.
And they blame you for that?
It was partially the light rail. It was also a firearm safety regulation issue, which brought some people out. But from there on, it was the light rail was the dominant issue.
Right.
And, you know, maybe the biggest vote I'll ever take in my life, I already took on that, right? In terms of the amount of the amount of money and the impact on the future and the awareness in the public of both sides of the issue. So at any rate, it was a really great experience to go through an issue like that,
right?
To see so many aspects of of government at its sort of most fevered.
So that was
a really good experience.
It's always good to break a fever, and unless it's Carolina fever, we always want to keep that going.
Yep.
We're talking to Mark Margopoulos, and we're gonna talk a lot more about how the Orange County government is now run under his leadership. That's a little joke there, and much more, including the budget and other non-controversial topics. And we'll be right back with more. You're listening to 97.9 The Hill. Okay, we're back and talking to Mark Margopoulos, our brand new newbie Orange County Commissioner, and we're talking about this trial by fire first night, first issue, light rail, piece of cake. So tell us about that. Break that down for me a little bit about how that was.
Well, it was, like I said, the very first night we took 2 hours of public comment, and I knew I was right in the frying pan.
Yeah.
And so I immersed myself in the issue because it was so complicated,
right?
So much to learn and really fascinating. So I knew that when we cast the final vote to either stay in the agreement with Durham and move it forward or not, that I was going to disappoint a lot of people because I had friends and supporters on both sides, right?
Right.
So I, not only did obviously want to make the right vote, I also wanted to be able to explain to anyone who asked me
Why you did it the way you did. So I
set about talking to people on both sides of the issue and just learning about all types of transportation. I mean, I didn't know the nuances of bus rapid transit before that, right?
And
I got into that and learned about that and read everything I could about other light rail projects and talked to government officials who had been involved in it. So it was a great experience, really.
Yeah.
It was really all-consuming. I realized after we finally cast the vote, I just felt like this weight had lifted off of me.
Yeah, I imagine I imagine so.
A lot led up to that day.
You surely drove home and said, well, what's going to be tough after this? If that's your first night, I mean.
Yeah. I mean, it was fortunate in that way that I was able to experience that and realize that there's hardly any other issue that's going to come up that's going to be that intense.
Yeah.
And that monumental, really.
I think the very first night that I covered the Board of Aldermen, this would be back in 2000 or something, or 99, and the very first night that I covered them, they were having a public hearing and were going to decide that night, which they don't do usually now. They usually have a public hearing and decide at a subsequent meeting. But anyway, about doing a road connector for a road that's a dead end. They had a connected roads policy that they did back then to try to prevent a lot of cul-de-sac roads, which cause all kinds of problems. And it was surprising to me, at least, surprisingly complicated about the type of housing that they were going to build, that there were plans to develop on this road, that this is why they needed the connection and so forth. And it dropped me right into the deep end of covering that board and their dynamic. And then I had to file the story on deadline. So I had to Wi-Fi, what's that? So I had to cover it and then leave the meeting at about 11 o'clock, dash home to my house, which is near Camp New Hope, not right next door to the Carrboro Town Hall, and write the story and submit it electronically to the Herald Sun online. I submitted it by email and was on the phone with the editor there, which actually was Mark Schultz. He was on the Metro desk at that time.
Yeah.
And that was a heck of a first experience for doing government journalism. The story came out okay. There were no glaring errors in it, and It was an absolutely trial by fire experience, and it kind of gave me the bug, for covering that board, because, in those days, you got the board packet, you got a printed packet, and you could study the stuff a day or two before and all that. You can still get that. Of course, it's electronic, but there's so many things in the process that are quicker, but it doesn't I don't think it's really affected the board in their rate of consideration, but it can affect how quickly people can get riled up about an issue. And often, and I know you're going to run into this if you haven't already, come into their position of objection about the issue much too late. It would be a real, you know, it's always the case where an apartment complex goes up and, you know, they've got like 3 weeks of work left to do on it. And now people are upset that it was built there.
Well, it's like the East 54 development several years ago when the steel was up and the superstructure was there. All of a sudden, people were running around going,
what's
high
that?
Rises in Chapel Hill?
Oh, my God. What is that?
They did not know that it had been talked about publicly for years.
Yeah.
I mean, ever since the rural buffer, this was going to be the end result of right. the controlled density. Yeah, but that happens. Yeah, people
yeah.
get in at the last minute.
And that's a puzzlement to me. There's an awful lot of information available. Do you have to go door to door and just say to people, here are the drawings, they're going to build this? I mean, put your activist hat on, I guess, to answer that. Is that what needs to happen for people to really be informed? It's really hard to break through, it seems.
Well, there's limited time, right? You know,
right.
And that's another thing that I've realized is when I'm studying a new issue, I often think, well, I need to tell so-and-so about this, and I need to let this friend of mine who I know is into this issue know about this. And I just run out of time, you know.
Yeah. Right.
I'm going to try and figure out ways to do better, have – you know, maybe email lists or something that can spread some information a little quicker and more wholesale.
Right.
But that's a challenge.
Are you on Twitter, Mark?
I am on Twitter.
You are on Twitter. Are you tweeting much?
I tweet somewhat frequently. Here and there.
Everyone needs to follow Mark Margopoulos
it's
on Twitter.
MMARCOPLOS. The more you tweet, the more I'll tweet.
It's catchy. So I'm going to start tweeting Mark Margopoulos on Twitter. And you can, of course, you can follow me at Jean Bolduc. You have to spell that out yourself. JEANBOLDUC. Or as I'll soon be called, Grandma. I can't wait. Should I get a...
Nice. So congratulations.
Yeah, thank you. So here's my question. Should I get a Twitter handle for just being a grandma?
You should get a Twitter handle for your grandchild.
For my grandchild. And it should be like Jean's at Jean's grandchild. That's catchy. Everybody will follow that. Everybody will follow my grandchild. And my children will stop speaking to me if I did that, by the way.
Yep. Incidentally.
Oh, I should do a whole show about, kids and social media and how they shouldn't have anything to do with each other for a really, really long time. In fact, my kids are in their late 20s and mid-30s, and I'm still not sure it's the right thing for them. So anyway, so we're going to talk a little bit, especially in our next segment, about our good friends in Raleigh and in the asylum in Raleigh and some of the things that they've been up to. And I say that at the risk of offending asylums.
Right.
Because it's – I think especially with – we're recording today on Thursday, and there was this terrible event in Alexandria, Virginia yesterday, the shooting. And, I do worry about – the temperature, the political temperature, and the ideas that can tend to get chilled by people who first jack up the temperature, then something terrible happens, and then they say, oh, this is not the time for you to be questioning our authority about this or, you know, whatever. I don't know how all that's going to play out, and I don't know what's going to go down in Raleigh. Now, they're not in session now, right?
Yeah, they are.
Oh, they are?
Yeah.
They are. That's right, because they're doing budget this year, right?
Yeah, they're coming down the home stretch.
Of course,
so,
that's right.
Yep.
Yeah. So, oh, well. Okay. Well, we'll stew on this for just a moment before we come back. We're talking with Mark Margopoulos, our wonderful new Orange County commissioner, who is now fully trained, right?
Almost.
You've got your training wheels almost completely off.
I'm getting there.
And almost completely off, right? You've only fallen off the bike once or twice, I'm sure. And you're listening to The Weekend Water Cooler on 97.9 The Hill. And we're back with Mark Margopoulos talking about the General Assembly, you know, and we feel like we need to take a little bath afterwards. But they're up to quite a bit of mischief with their considering budget. They're looking at budget now. Talk to me, Mark, a little bit about what are the things that they're up to, little and large. Start with the little that I, in my tiny mind, can understand.
Well, I'll start with what's front and center right now, and that is that Orange County has had for, I don't know the exact number of years, maybe 15 or 20, the ability to charge impact fees.
Yeah, I think that's right.
On when you build a home or somebody builds apartments, whatever, mm-hmm. you know, the thinking is that it's going to generate so many children for the school system.
Right.
And that, so they should pay a little bit for future expansion of the school system.
Right. That should be part of the cost of buying your house, your
yeah.
newly constructed house, or moving into your newly constructed apartment.
And it was, and so Orange County got permission to do that just for itself
right.
at that time. It was one of those special acts of the General Assembly for
right.
a local government.
Right.
So now in these times of animosity and retribution, they don't really like Orange County all that much.
Right.
And they, you know, the development community is very much backing the Republican majority,
mm-hmm.
trying to do away with any and all regulations that they consider to impede their profit seeking. At any rate, the House has passed a bill to take that right away from Orange County, and the Senate is soon to pass it, and we expect that they will. So it's going to cost about $1.5 million a year, something in that. I can't remember the exact number, but something around there that would go towards school construction.
Right.
And we struggle. I mean, right, we're in the middle of the budget season right now, and we struggle to provide enough money for the schools
right.
under the sort of the neglect of the state.
Right.
And this is just one more kick in the shins.
Right. Now, here are my questions about this. The General Assembly's actions here affect only Orange County?
Yes. Although I'll say that I think that there's another county or two that has impact fees it might be in another bill. But mm-hmm. I believe that this bill is specifically for Orange County. And it came about because of an apartment complex that was planned for on Hillsborough Road in Chapel Hill, going down the hill
right.
there. Primarily students. And this local developer was disappointed to find out that he was going to have to pay impact fees.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to go into too complicated and long a story here. But we had some developers of apartment complexes and senior living complexes come to us and talk about the large amount of money they're going to have to pay in impact fees.
Right, and that I'm going to guess that they wanted to have that waived because bringing in more seniors is not going to impact
right. so that's
the school system.
Yep. And also, they didn't really want it waived, which was, you know, honorable. They were just saying, can we work something out here? You know, let's be
can
reasonable.
You reduce it, right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we did. I mean, we listened to it and we had a reasonable discussion, and
mm-hmm.
we reduced it. And interestingly, the night before this bill that is going to pass was first introduced, a representative from the developer came to our meeting and very calmly talked about the situation. And we said, you know, you weren't paying attention. You weren't paying attention
right.
a few weeks ago, a couple of months ago, when these people came and we worked something out with them.
Right.
I said, but that's okay. We'll work something out with you.
Okay.
And we thought,
we knew the backstory.
We knew the backstory. We knew that this guy was conspiring with this representative from Surry County
right.
to introduce this bill. And lo and behold, after we, in good faith, had
right.
said, we'll work with you. We'll reduce it. We'll figure
right.
something out that's fair.
Right.
He went ahead and did it anyway.
Yeah.
And that was, you know, that was a little disturbing right there. But and so now it's apparently we're going to get socked with this shortfall.
Right.
You know, it's
the reason I ask if they were going to introduce a bill that said, you know, doggone it, this thing in Orange County is just, that's the last straw. Even if they tried to mitigate it, they're not, you know, most of the time they're not reducing it, and it's outrageous, and counties just shouldn't be able to do that, and statewide, by George, you know, all of them have to go. I could almost respect that, almost, but I bet that's not the case.
Well, here's what they almost did. Greg Meyer and some others, I guess, came up with an alternative approach, and they said, look, we know impact fees are a problem. We need to have a discussion about it and get a more streamlined approach statewide. There's a lot of concern that different localities do it differently. So let's pass a bill that says we're going to study the various impact fees across the state and reach some conclusion on that policy. The intent of that was that meanwhile, all the different impact fees that were in place around the state would remain.
Right.
And that was a sane and logical way to go about it.
Right.
In that spirit, we reverted back to the impact fees that we had last year.
Right.
We did a 4-year update on the impact fees, and they went up. So we, in good faith, we said, okay, we'll scale back.
Right.
And then that'll be our impact fee.
And we'll await
the results of this process in the study.
Well, it's
so good faith,
it's a reasonable thing again.
Good faith goes unrewarded almost every time with this crew.
I would say so.
Raleigh,
yeah.
You know.
I would say so. And I guess my next question is: so let's assume, because it's a reasonable assumption, that they can not only pass it in the Senate, but that they pass it with the amount of leeway that. They have enough votes that Cooper can't veto.
Which is likely,
very likely. Mm-hmm. Is there a legal option to challenge that? Because to me, I don't get what the standing is of Surry County to get into this.
I don't think there's anything illegal about that. The legislature has the power in North Carolina to legislate over local governments.
Right.
And if somebody sponsors a bill, that has no real bearing on
so
anything.
This is basically to undo the enabling legislation that was passed years ago for that. And so what they've done, they have the right, they have a certain right to undo regardless of the cause. So that being the case, that's a political problem. That's a pretty much a purely political problem. It's not an overreach of legal authority by the state. But it is, without a doubt, in my mind, it is one more assault on home rule. For what reason, I'm not sure. That's where I'd love to be able to have some reasonable discussion, you know, by some authority about what is your standing in Surry County to object? Why do you care about this, Surry County? Is this just – sounds like pure politics.
You know, it's the same reason they try to take Asheville's water supply away and Charlotte's airport authority. They are just slash and burn organization. You know, they single out these, so-called liberal – governments
are the bastions of liberalism, right?
And just punish them. I mean, it's just it's beyond civility and reason. You know, it's out of control. And you know, the whole thing about home rule is we could go on and on about that. But that's the biggest impediment to progressive legislation in North Carolina. The fact that you can't pass a bill if you want to that says you're going to ban plastic bags, say. You got to get permission from the people in Raleigh to do little things that your community might agree on is a good thing, and that's just absurd.
Well, and that brings us a little bit to what we started to talk about during the break about HB2 and about the so-called fix for that, and just about sometimes it's right to codify things into local ordinances and into written policy. But sometimes it's better and more strategic to just try to accomplish things more in the area of practice and procedure, and stay away from what's written and enforceable and all that stuff. And those things, by doing it that way, taking that approach, require good faith and trust in government. And I think it's going to be a challenge for local governments, probably not ours that much. To get the public to kind of go along and, try to get things done that we want to get done as a community, but without passing ordinances and doing things that involve Raleigh. It's like working around Raleigh is what's necessary to operate now.
Yeah, so I don't know if many people know this, but there were plans to have a lawsuit, a joint lawsuit with Carrboro and Hillsboro and Chapel Hill and Durham and Orange County.
Mm-hmm.
And we were in various stages of discussion about whether or not to do that. Just before the so-called repeal of HB 2 occurred. And so we are not going to do that. There was enough of a change, and we didn't feel like it was worth it to pursue anymore. But interestingly, there was a lot of discussion about retribution, right? So that fear factor played into it, where you're sitting there going, well, this is the right thing to do. But what if it costs the county millions of dollars?
Exactly.
Right? Because these people fight dirty, and they hold a grudge. So it's just a real interesting
atmosphere. And isn't it better to mobilize for 2020? That's when you can put in the LGBT protections, right?
Yeah. Well, that's the solution right now. I mean, 2018 and 2020, we have got to get control of the legislature and start to bring some sane policies back.
Start building things back.
That's really the solution.
Been destroyed.
Yeah.
Well, in our next segment, we're going to talk a little bit about that, about our hope for the future, which we still maintain somehow. We're talking with Mark Margopoulos here on the Weekend Water Cooler. You're listening to 97.9 The Hill. Okay, we're back with our good friend Mark Margopoulos, Orange County Commissioner. And Mark, we've saved the best for last. Always follow the money. Let's talk about the budget. And as I said, we're recording on Thursday for air on Saturday, and then the commissioners will vote on the budget, and that's your last vote, right? Have you taken any preliminary vote at all? Do you vote on the budget twice? That's my first question.
No. Certain aspects of the budget, certain building blocks of the budget, we will discuss, and you can say we vote on them. We agree this is going to be in it, but it's not final. I mean, we still have – everybody has the right till the very end to raise the issue again. But we do try and take care of business along the way, systematically go through the different departments and the different obligations that we have and agree, talk about it, change them, basically agree. Put it together. We're going to have a big meeting tonight where we're going to go through a lot of stuff because we're going to vote on Tuesday to adopt budget.
On Tuesday the 20th, and that's obviously a public meeting and everybody can watch and so forth. That is probably just about the final word on the budget. And if my my memory and experience are correct, if there are changes throughout the year, you can do budget amendments to transfer money and things like that.
It's going to be at the Southern Human Services Center at 7 o'clock.
Right, and on Homestead Road.
Yep.
Right. Mm-hmm. And now for the drum roll, let's talk about how massive the budget, how massive the tax increase is going to be for our beloved fellow citizens.
Well, finances are tight, but we're not going to raise taxes this year, to my knowledge.
I hope hope no one listening has gone off the road.
This could change.
Shock.
I don't want to write this in
this
dark ink.
Yeah, this is your expectation.
Yeah, this has been sort of our consensus. But, at the last minute, somebody could say, wait a second, we need another $1.5 million for this, that, and the other. I don't want to speak for everybody. Our general approach right now is that we want to stick with the money we've got coming in and the financial situation that we have with, the borrowing the governments always do and that kind of thing. We're looking at the bond money is turning into debt very soon.
Right.
And that debt is likely to result in a tax increase in the future and likely as soon as next year.
Right.
And we don't know how much that might be.
Right. The reason I ask especially about, how much of an increase would it be is that I think all of us understanding some of the cuts that have been coming from Raleigh, would have expected a tax increase locally to take up the slack for that. But Orange County's government, like all governments, has a rainy day fund of some sort. And it seems to me that if politically you're considering what a rainy day fund might be, politically it's pouring outside, and it's probably a good time to spend some of the rainy day fund to hold that gap, to close that gap, and wait for an election year.
Well, that's exactly what we did. We had a long, involved discussion about the wisdom of reducing the amount of reserve. It's a policy, right?
Right.
So it was 17%
right.
for several years.
Wow.
It's a lot of money sitting around. The conventional wisdom is that you want to have 2 months of operating funds
right.
in your reserve in case
right.
things happen.
Right.
Well, the fact of the matter is, and I asked our financial consultant who is well versed in all this stuff, like, how many counties have ever gotten to that point where they needed 2 months, right?
Right.
And
where they actually had to
yeah.
use it.
So
yeah.
it's kind of like a rare. So a lot of governments, especially Republican-led governments, they like to salt the money away,
mm-hmm.
and then, you know, sooner or later, ooh, there's a tax break for Monsanto or whatever, right?
Yeah.
You know, so there's a strategy that they think they're doing a good job governing if they can salt money away.
Right.
Well, that's the people's money.
Right.
And if the people need stuff, and if we have educational needs, and we have social services needs, and
right.
all the various needs, we're really shortchanging the people who need these services if we're just sitting on that money, saying we're so smart and responsible, we're saving this for undefined
yeah
need. Some disastrous event down the road, right? We're going to be fine. We changed it 16%, so that 1% means that we're going to have a little over $2 million more.
Right.
To spend this year.
Right.
And certainly some of that will go toward the schools.
Right.
And we're just going to have a
right.
discussion on various other needs.
Which we've talked about before, that the schools are a huge percentage of what the Orange County government spends its money on.
Yeah, almost 50%.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah. It's tough. I mean, the needs always seem to outpace the resources,
right.
and
right.
we're, and then you think, you know, we're a wealthy county in
right.
general,
right.
you know, just in general, and you look around the state. I mean, Dare County and Orange County fund schools to the highest per pupil amount any counties in the state.
Interesting.
They flip back from one and two.
Right.
You know, so here we are. We think we have shortfalls with the school systems, and from our perspective, we do, because we want
right.
to do these advanced programs, and we want to do
right.
the best we can.
Right.
And you think about these poor counties around the state
yeah.
who are way down on the, you know, down in the
right.
80, 90, 100 level. Those kids are getting nothing.
They really, you know? They really are.
And it's really the state's responsibility.
Yeah.
To ensure that schools are properly funded.
Right.
And they just don't do it.
And there's parity. And, you know, this is the thing about the impact fee, is that I think it makes a lot of sense to study the impact fee, because it might put on display that there is a terrific lack of parity county to county. And, you know, that's just flat out unfair.
Yep.
That some kid who lives in Chatham County and is just a few miles from the Orange County line has access to half of the AP courses,
mm-hmm.
and so on and so on. And it just seems that there is an obligation to try to make that more
yeah.
equal. You can't make it perfect, but...
Right. But, you know, that's going to come down to, can we change the legislature? Because these people are just running interference for
right.
privatization of schools.
Right,
they're,
right.
If it's not making money for some rich crony of theirs,
yeah.
they don't give it the time of day.
Yeah, Betsy DeVos School of Education.
Yeah.
I just have no faith in their intent.
Right.
Almost
yeah.
start to finish. Yeah, you can
mm-hmm.
probably pick a topic. Sorry, Raleigh.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't mean Raleigh. Raleigh's a lovely city. I mean the General Assembly,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
which should be, you know, it should be its own zip code. And, you know, you remember what Jesse Helms said about putting the fence around Chapel Hill.
Yeah.
Well, there probably is a fence around the General Assembly building in Raleigh.
Should be. So we're going to do some good things in the budget, too, like just little things that are going to make a big difference, like a couple more people in the building inspections department.
Mm-hmm.
As a builder, I'm happy to hear
Yay.
That things will move on
move
a little quicker
along,
on
yeah.
that front. Environmental health for septic and well inspections. And we're basically keeping our human services departments and efforts rolling.
At least at this year's level.
We're going to hire someone to help facilitate the growth of the bus system in the county.
Right.
Which is, a lot of people during the light rail discussion, a lot of people were saying, well, what's that going to do for us in Orange County? What's that going to do for our bus system? Well, we were aware of that, and we heard what they said, and we have put more resources into expanding and evolving that bus system,
Fantastic.
So a lot of good stuff that's going to come out of this budget, despite in some places having to make a tough decision not to go higher and raise taxes, I mean, when I'll never forget when I was campaigning, I was talking to someone in Eflin. It was an older woman, and she said, when you get to be a county commissioner, don't you let those people in Chapel Hill raise my taxes. She told me she's on a fixed income, Social Security.
That's right.
And, then I'll go to a public hearing and I'll hear somebody stand up in Chapel Hill and say, raise my taxes. My little Julie needs the best education we could possibly give her.
Exactly.
And I just want to put those people at the same table together.
Let's say this is
the county that you live in, right? You both have your reasonable perspective.
Exactly.
But you need to know it affects somebody else.
Right. And somewhere in the middle is what's fair.
Yeah. And we're there. We're refereeing right there.
Yeah. You in a nice striped shirt. That's a great image. Well, Mark, as you were saying, you were mentioning about running out of time, and we've done exactly that. So I'm gonna thank you for being on this week. Please, please drop by the water cooler whenever you like for a nice fresh drink of truth. And I wish you all the best in your deliberations and on the vote on the budget that we're all behind you, for at least giving it your best shot.
Well, I appreciate that. I really do. Thanks.
All right. Well, thanks a lot, Mark. And we'll see you all next week here on the Weekend Water Cooler on 97.9 The Hill.
Follow Gene on Twitter at Gene Bolduc and tweet your comments and questions with the hashtag WCHL.